All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could join us today. Have you ever had a skull-pounding headache with the kind of throbbing pain that makes you want to crawl into a dark room and not move? Many of us get a headache now and then, maybe from stress or because we became seriously dehydrated on a hot day. But some people get recurring headaches, and they can be serious enough to keep people from school or work. They can also be hard to diagnose. By one estimate, a quarter of adults with episodic migraines haven't been able to get an accurate diagnosis and appropriate treatment. And there are other kinds of headaches that interfere with daily life, including cluster and tension headaches. And now it is clear that COVID-19 can trigger lingering headaches in some folks. So today we're talking with two neurologists about what causes pain in our head and new research into prevention and treatment. And I definitely want to hear from you. Do you experience migraines or headaches that interfere with your daily life? What makes them worse? What seems to help? Did you get headaches connected to COVID-19 that have lingered? What questions do you have for our experts? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, that number is 651-227-6000. You can also call 800-242-2828. You'll find me on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. You can leave me a note there. Let's bring in our guest. We have with us this morning Dr. Narayan Kasun. Dr. Kasun is a neurologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester and an assistant professor of neurology at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine. He specializes in treating headaches and facial pain. Good morning, Dr. Kasun.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Thank you for your time this morning. We also have with us Dr. Yoon-Hee Cha, a neurologist with mHealth Fairview and an associate professor at the University of Minnesota Medical School. She specializes in treating headaches as well as gait and balance problems. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Cha.
Good morning. Great to be here.
So a lot of us have experienced occasional headaches, and you two both treat people who have these chronic headaches, very serious headaches. So Dr. Kasun, how do your patients talk about what they go through? How do they describe their discomfort and how their headaches affect their lives?
I see a wide variety of patients with headache, but the most common I actually see just being in a subspecialty clinic is patients with very severe chronic migraine. And probably the most common thing I see, and that really means that oftentimes they're coming in with a headache day in, day out, and it has a major impact on their life. Many people aren't able to participate with family members, enjoy just recreational activities. They're unable to work effectively, and it is pretty disabling.
And how do they describe their symptoms to you, Dr. Kasun?
They give good descriptions of when the headaches are bad, and oftentimes I'll ask them how their headaches are doing on a bad day, because that really gives us the best sense of what's going on. And so I'll ask them, you know, when you have a bad headache, what does it sound like? Does it ever throb or pulsate? Do you want to curl up into a dark room and avoid the environment? And it's really kind of like a volume knob, and oftentimes they'll have this kind of mild, dull pressure headache that just kind of lingers in the background.
Sounds awful.
It is terrible. Mm. I feel for them very much. Mm. So,
and Dr. Cha, what do you hear from your patients?
Well, the pain of the headache is itself extremely distracting and can be very debilitating. But there are many other symptoms that come with a migraine, such as nausea or visual disturbance, you know, cognitive slowing or vertigo, and just the inability to tolerate normal sensory stimuli, you know, like the sound of normal conversational speech or just normal light patterns. And so it's the combination of, you know, that entire syndrome that adds to that disability. And these other symptoms can be as debilitating as the pain itself, even when the pain is not as, you know, at its maximum level.
And, you know, I have, fortunately, I don't think I've ever had a migraine, but I have many friends who do have them. And I'm interested in how they describe it. They always use the language, I feel a migraine coming on. And they seem to know then what that means and that it will, you know, basically affect them over the next day. And is that typical, Dr. Kassoun?
Yes, it is. We call them premonitory symptoms or symptoms that, you know, happen before the onset of a headache. Another thing that specifically with migraines, people experience what we call an aura. The most common aura we hear about is a visual aura, and that's what happens in 90% of patients who have aura or people who have migraine with aura. And what it is it can be various different visual symptoms, like a flashing light in their vision. They can have half of their vision missing for a period of time. Usually it's about 5 minutes to an hour in duration, usually about a half hour. And then that's usually at the onset of the headache just right before the headache.
And who is getting migraines? Is there a description? Are there some people who are more prone to them than others, Dr. Kassoun?
Yes, it is more common in women. It's depending on what study you're looking at. It's about 2 to 4 times more common, but it's as frequent as 20% of the population has migraine. 1/5 of all people in some studies. When you're looking specifically at men and males, it's more about 10 to 15%.
Wow.
So it's very, very common.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about it. And Dr. Cha, there are other types of headaches too. You know, I mentioned, you know, I started getting headaches really after I recovered from COVID. And so are you hearing now, I mean, about more people who are having more frequent headaches after recovering from COVID, Dr. Cha?
So certainly there are many post-COVID symptoms, headache being one of them. Sometimes this is related to other symptoms such as dizziness or cognitive problems or, you know, chronic fatigue. So that association is definitely real. We see a lot of it at the university, as I'm sure healthcare centers around the country are. Don't know exactly what causes it. You know, the post-COVID syndrome as being a direct effect on either neurons or in the immune cells that are in the brain, or some chronic effect outside the central nervous system that affects the function of the brain. You know, that's all still up in the air, but I would say that the association is real.
And Dr. Kassoun, are you hearing that too, that there is some connection between COVID-19 and more people having headaches more regularly?
Oh, very, very common. And this is not a new phenomenon. This is not a new thing we've noticed. There's this condition we call new daily persistent headache. We're not very creative in our names.
Okay. All it just say that means for me again. Say that again.
New daily persistent headache. Okay. And all it means is that a person will, there are people that develop a headache with a distinct day of onset and it just doesn't go away. It's a very tough and challenging to treat headache. And usually when we hear that story, we need to look into why that's happening. And oftentimes we'll get scans. But we do find that there's a large number of these that are related to a viral infection. More commonly, we think of Epstein-Barr virus or, you know, the virus that's mono. And interestingly, there are even reports even back in the 1890s with the pandemic, the Russian or Asiatic flu, where people develop this new daily persistent headache and very much the same or similar symptoms that people are having with long COVID syndrome. So
the lingering headaches, they are common after other viral infections. That's what you mean by there. It's not new.
Yes, this is something an association with viral infections we've seen in the past, yes.
Well, we're already getting lots of phone calls from listeners, so I do want to take some of these phone calls. If you're just joining us, we're talking about migraines and other headaches that can really interfere with your daily life. And I want to know what makes them worse, what seems to help. Did you get headaches connected to COVID-19 that have lingered? What questions do you have for our two guests who are both neurologists? You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's go to Richfield, where Todd is on the phone already. Good morning, Todd. What's going on with you?
Hi. Hi. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Hi, I was calling. I've been a migraine sufferer now for about 18 to 20 years. They've run on my dad's side of the family, so there's a bit of a hereditary tie. And the question I had is, how much research has been done into concussions and subconcussive impact in adolescents and migraine onsets in late adolescence?
Did you have a concussion?
I played hockey for about 14 years.
Yeah.
And I think that is potentially connected in to my migraine.
Okay. All right. A couple of questions there from Todd in Richfield, suffering from migraines for a long time since he was young, and is also asking about, is there a genetic connection there? Do you find that, Dr. Kassoun?
Yes, we do. If someone has migraine, their children have about a 50% chance of also having migraine. So it's a pretty strong connection. It's due to a lot of different genetics and it's multiple genes that play a role, but there's a very strong association.
And then what about the concussion? He described having a concussion as a teenager playing sports. Can that lead to problems later in life with headaches?
Oh, very much so. And we very commonly see people that have headaches after a head injury. There's a lot of research that looks into the impact of head injuries and concussions on headache. And they've actually found that the same activity that you see with migraine happens in animal models after a head injury.
Let's take another phone call in Edina. Anne is on the line. And Anne, what's your question about headaches and migraines?
Well, my question is related to food. About 3 years ago, after 20 years of migraines with 6 aspirin a day or Imitrex multiple times a month, I had a test out of the Cleveland Clinic called the MRT that told me what foods I was sensitive to, and I cut all those out, including asparagus, which is one of my favorite foods, and sulfates, and nitrates. And if I ever have a glass of wine, I always filter it for the sulfates, and I have not had a migraine since, nor do I really need to take aspirin anymore, and I gave my Imitrex away. So food sensitivity for 20 years, I wish I'd known that earlier.
So a diet change to help you with your treatment of your chronic migraines.
Yes, thank heaven.
All right. Thank you. That's Anna Dina. A great point she brings up there. What do we know about the connection between what we eat, Dr. Cha, and the headaches and migraines that we may suffer?
Yeah. So first of all, kudos to Anne for figuring this out. We do encourage patients to keep headache diaries, to keep track of things like what they eat, changes in their sleep, stress, the kind of stimulations that they are under. Because sometimes, people have unusual food triggers. They're not always the classic ones like red wine and aged cheeses and chocolate. But they are things like asparagus, or, I had a patient who had migraines triggered by peaches. And so you have, you know, she had to give up peaches. And so it's hard to figure these things out unless you look at them prospectively. It's hard to, you know, kind of put the pieces together on the back end. So, you know, the gut, you know, has a very large nervous system. And we do know that things that go into the gut can affect the brain also. And so I don't know that we know exactly which molecules are affected. And so sometimes I just say, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so if you can even do like a 1 month diary to figure this out, this is, you know, in this case, she was incredibly successful in being able to not take medications. And that's what we'd like for patients.
I hear many people talk about the red wine. Like a lot of people won't drink red wine because they know it will give them a headache. The foods, this is new to me, and fruits and vegetables. I mean, she talked about asparagus, so that can be common too. And you mentioned peaches for some people.
It can be some unusual things like that. You know, some people have reactions to fruits, to dairy, to soy, you know, to certain types of dyes in foods. You know, there's certain kinds of processed foods that can be strong triggers for some patients. And so doing a little bit of detective work, you know, thinking about it on the front end can definitely, I mean, you know, it can save you 20 years of headaches, you know, in some cases.
Let's take another phone call in St. Paul. Shannon is on the line. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on with you and headaches?
Well, I've been suffering from headaches for about 25 years. You know, I like the other caller said, you know, I keep diaries.
A headache diary. You keep a headache diary.
Migraine diary. And I, you know, I was allergic or am allergic to red wine because of the tan, so I don't drink red wine anymore. I haven't in years. You know, I linked it to my menstrual cycle and to the barometric pressure I've noticed, you know, the atmospheric
the
pressure,
weather,
you know,
and
the weather, definitely the weather. Mm. And, you know, I would just like to say it's very important to find, a neurologist that you gel with that believes you in your pain, because from my experience, I've had neurologists that, you know, that were kind of skeptical if I really did have a migraine, you know, if my diagnosis was really migraine, and had, you know, kind of like the gatekeeper of the medication. And, you know, when you're in pain, you need that med. And so, you know, from my experience, they want, you know, you need authorization to get the med, so you have to call, and that's like more of a lengthier time to go to the pharmacy to get it instead of just like doing a refill. So I would just say, you know, get a neurologist that understands you, and that you deal with, and, you know, keep track of the diary of the foods or whatnot. And yeah.
Shannon, I can hear a lot of distress in your voice. This has been disruptive to your life.
Oh, it has been. But you know, as of late, the migraines have, you know, kind of died down. I don't know if it was a pandemic or whatnot that made everybody sit at home and kind of relax a little bit. Well, you know, quote unquote relax, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
the diary sounds like that you sort of take control of it, and you can link what's happening to what may cause a migraine or bring it on.
Yes, and I can sense when one is coming on too. Mm-hmm. So it's not kind of like aura, but like I can sense like, okay, one is coming today.
Thank you, Shannon, for calling in. Dr. Kassoun, a lot there. First, let's talk about, you know, she talked about finding a neurologist who believes her. So there's some stigma that is attached to migraines.
Yes, there is. And, you know, some of the issues that she brings up is that we as providers need to do a better job of listening, and sometimes we don't do that in the best way possible. And finding a provider that you're comfortable with and that you can have a good working relationship with is extremely important. And because you know, migraine is a chronic disease. It's not even a disease. It's just a different way of how the brain processes. But you know, it's a chronic condition, and you need to have somebody that you have a good relationship with as a provider that listens to you. And you know that the stigma. You know, it's one of those things where. You know, you've a lot of times when patients with migraine or people that have migraine, they feel a little less connected to the world, and feel distant from family, friends, from work, and it can be very challenging for people.
And, you know, we mentioned in the introduction that it can be hard to diagnose because it's not like you can take a blood test and say, like, yep, I have a migraine. It's a pain. It's a feeling that people describe.
Exactly. And so it can be very tough because, you know, we all base the diagnosis on what someone is telling us. Mm-hmm. There's nothing on the exam that tells us it. An MRI does not show us any clear, strong findings of migraines, the ones that we use routinely. And so you know, the diagnosis kind of lies in the questions that I as a provider ask and what the patient tells us or the person tells us when we're talking to them.
And Shannon brought up another thing. I have a question or statement on Twitter from Vicky. Vicky says, Angela, I seem to get migraines when it storms recently. Is there anything that can help with that? And so Shannon mentioned barometric pressure, that when there are changes in the atmosphere of the weather, she gets migraines. Do you hear that, Dr. Kassoun?
Oh, very commonly. That's a daily occurrence. I'll hear that from somebody. And there's, and I was just looking at this the other day. There's two good studies that look at the association of weather changes and weather and there are clear associations with. Things like the temperature, humidity, and it's not necessarily a specific number, but it's a change, and that's a big thing in migraine is that you know a migraine brain does not like change. It's these changes in weather, changes in sleep schedule, changes in mm-hmm. diet. Doing things that are outside of the norm that cause problems and make things challenging.
You know, Dr. Cha, as I listen to these stories, I feel like I can't win. I mean, you know, I have to be careful with, you know, the food I choose. I can't control the weather. So if you're someone who is a frequent sufferer of migraines, I mean, how do people describe how they, you know, get through this without it affecting their mental health?
Right. I think the caller brought up a lot of incredibly important aspects of, you know, being a migraine sufferer. And, you know, our general principle is to control what you can and to, you know, get help with the parts that you can, that you can't. And even if you don't have headaches every day, just the lack of predictability of when mm-hmm. that next headache can come, you know, can have an outsized, you know, role in the quality of your life. So, but as Dr. Kassoun mentioned, you know, the brain, it likes predictability, right? And so as much as is within your control to give your, you know, circadian patterns, like, you know, a good run, right? So get regular sleep, get, you know, food at the right times of the day, and also to modulate your activity level. So that affects when we also get light exposure. Some of the biggest triggers for headaches are actually sleep deprivation, as well as oversleeping and missing meals.
Too much sleep? And too much sleep can be problematic as well?
Absolutely. So this is a reason why people have vacations and weekends destroyed, because, you know, they will have their regular sleep pattern during the week, where they might, you know, get up at 6 and have their breakfast and have their coffee, you know, by 8 o'clock. But then on the weekends, they're sleeping until 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Or they go on a vacation, and now they're sleeping until noon. As someone who personally had the first month of medical school ruined from weekend migraines, I absolutely, you know, I'm convinced this is a phenomena, but patients also describe this, and I believe them.
So what is that, as a neurologist, what's happening in the brain? It's a change. So your body's used to, you know, 5 days a week getting this amount of sleep, and then you'd shift and do something different on the weekend. That can bring on the headache?
Well, I think the holy grail of migraine is what is the sort of big bang, right, that starts the migraine cascade. So there's, you know, definitely a neuronal component of, you know, hyperexcitability that, you know, goes into another phase of neuronal depression and some vascular changes. But sometimes the order in which some of those things happen, because eventually they all happen, because that's how mm-hmm. our treatments are targeted toward different parts of that cascade. But, you know, there's a rhythm that goes through your entire day, including during waking hours. So, you know, we all know the concept of, you know, a REM cycle, a sleep cycle when you're sleeping, but you also have cycles during the day. So, you know, putting a lot of variability into those cycles can throw off all of your balance.
All right, let's get another phone call before we take a news break. In Minneapolis, Michelle is on the line. Good morning, Michelle. And what's happening with you and headaches?
Good morning. I have had in the past some persistent and I would say intense headaches that I have realized are actually connected to tight muscles in my back. And partly I found that out through a massage when I was getting the massage. And as the person found the knot in my back, and that pain just radiated right to the spot in my head. And so I'm just wondering from the doctors where they make those connections to the musculoskeletal system, how much they work with physical therapists or other diagnostics around how the muscular system might be relating to a headache. Mm. Thank you.
All right. That's Michelle talking about muscle tension. Dr. Kassoun, anything to add to that?
Yeah, there's kind of two pieces to that. One, With migraine, there is a lot of activation of kind of some of the muscles in the neck more commonly, where even with migraine, people get a tense and uncomfortable neck. They'll get tightness in the muscles. And then the other is we also look for different kinds of triggers. And one thing we often or sometimes will come across is like a cervicogenic trigger or a trigger to the migraines related to arthritis or musculoskeletal pain or musculoskeletal structures in the neck. Usually it's the neck, but I do hear some instances where it's kind of the upper thoracic or the back where they can have kind of these trigger points.
Back to the phone lines where in Mankato, we have Liz on the line. Liz, thank you for waiting. And what did you want to ask?
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask about migraines in children. So I suffer from migraines myself, but my daughter often complains about headaches, and she's 8. Oh. And I don't know whether it's, you know, enough water, enough sleep, stress, you know, all those things, or if she's developing migraines like I have, or if I should be, you know, talking to her pediatrician, or if I should be skipping that and going straight to a neurologist.
And Liz, does your daughter, does she have nausea? And what are her symptoms? What does she describe?
You know, it's usually mostly a headache. Sometimes she wants to turn off the lights and turn down loud noises and stuff, you know, so that makes me think maybe it's a migraine, but sometimes it's very... It seems to be more tied to anxiety or wanting to, you know, not do something as well. You know, it's really tricky with kids.
Right.
And they don't have a lot of necessarily the same language to describe what's
the
going
words.
On.
Right. Well, let's ask both doctors about this. Dr. Kassoun, what do we know about children and migraines? Liz's daughter is 8 years old.
It is very common for, especially with a strong family history, to develop migraines pretty young in life. From what you're describing, it is very suggestive of migraine, and I think it would be extremely important to, and I think starting with your pediatrician would be a good place to start to look at what's going on, and to one, confirm what's going on, and two, to kind of go through what we've been talking about during this talk today, and look and see if there's any triggers that may be making her more prone to having headaches.
Would a headache diary be helpful in this case?
That would be, sometimes it's kind of hard to get kids to keep the diary, but I think that would be helpful, and see how frequent, you know, things are happening. And oftentimes mom knows best and can really see what's happening. And it sounds like you're rightfully aware of what's going on. And if she's having pretty frequent headaches, it may be something where if lifestyle things and adjustments to triggers doesn't do the trick, then trying a medication may be an option. You know, the nice thing is your experiences kind of can help guide to maybe see which medications may work for your daughter or your son or whoever your children may have with the headaches. Yeah.
Dr. Cha, what can you share with us about children and migraines, and how frequently do you hear about cases like this?
Sure. So, despite being an adult neurologist, I do see, a lot of adults who've had their migraines since they were children. Mm. And we do know that there is a life cycle of migraine-related symptoms, that happens, throughout life. So, for example, people who are prone to developing migraine headaches may be very motion sick as children, or they might be prone to having vertigo spells or spells of unexplained abdominal pain. And some people just have outright headaches when they are children. It can be a little bit tricky sometimes because, the headaches in kids may not have all of the features of headaches in adults, so they may not be quite as severe. Or they might not have all the associated, symptoms. They might also be shorter. So this is where, talking to the pediatrician and also, there are pediatric neurologists who focus on these problems in young people would be very helpful. And I would echo the idea about keeping a diary, not only just food and sleep, but also things like screen time, and how often, they're like sitting in one position with their head down. Sometimes this is a trigger for headaches. So, I would look at, the entire picture.
All right. I really do want to get into treatments. So Dr. Cha, how do some of the over-the-counter drugs like aspirin or ibuprofen or maybe acetaminophen, how do they actually work in our bodies to lessen headaches? Are there some good over-the-counter medications that people can take that will really help with headaches?
Well, if a headache is not very severe and it is, rather occasional, then an anti-inflammatory dose level of, ibuprofen or naproxen, which is generally in the 600 to 800 milligram, dose level, can be very helpful. But once the headache starts to become more frequent and the use starts to, pick up every other day or, several times a week, we do really recommend that people seek out, the help of a physician, because number one, they should get an actual diagnosis of whatever their headache disorder is, but also, we want them to get on good preventative medication to avoid overusing those types of medicines.
Right, because there is a danger of overusing medications, particularly the over-the-counter ones. You don't want to be taking, them like every day for weeks.
That's correct. And there is actually a headache type called medication overuse headaches. And so once that happens, and so this is, this can happen with simple analgesics like, acetaminophen, ibuprofen, caffeine containing products, all the combination pills out there. And once you layer medication overuse headaches on top of the primary headache disorder, it can make it very challenging to figure out what is the original headache disorder.
Dr. Kassoun, what kind of medications are available now to prevent these serious chronic headaches? Because I understand that there are some newer medications that were not available even 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's an incredible time to be a headache provider, because there's probably anywhere from, I think, is it now 7 or 8 new medications that are now FDA approved for the treatment of migraine.
Wonderful.
The kind of the first wave of medications that came out were these medications called CGRP monoclonal antibodies. So CGRP is a pain protein. It's short for calcitonin gene-related peptide. And this is a pain protein that we've seen that is increased in migraine. And what this these antibodies do is they bind to CGRP and they clear it from the system, and it's been shown to be pretty effective and pretty well tolerated. And about half the patients that try these medications get about a 50% or half their headaches cut down and reduced by 50%.
So if you're a migraine sufferer, but you have not, gone to a doctor to talk specifically about your migraines in the last couple of years, it's worth asking about these new medications?
Yes. But first, though, part of the challenge is we always, and it's always good practice to try the things that have been around for a long time, and usually insurance requires and just kind of standard of care is to try 2 oral prevention medications first in different types to be a candidate for these medications, because they are pretty expensive, whether it's mm-hmm. co-pays or covered by insurance. They are options, but you have to do your due diligence to try some of these more common medications first.
And Dr. Kassoun, I know that some people get Botox injections for migraines and headaches. Does that work, or what does that do?
It does work, and it's probably one of the most effective things that I have to offer for the treatment of chronic migraine. And chronic migraine, it doesn't mean necessarily just that you've had headaches for a long time. For us, it has a specific meaning that you have more than 15 days a month of headache. And that's been going on for over 3 months. So it kind of is a marker of how bad the headaches are and how hard they are to treat.
And how does it work? Why is it helpful in reducing the pain of a migraine, a Botox injection?
That's a very interesting question. We're just more recently figuring out what it's doing. We used to think that it only worked by inhibiting the muscles, and the funny thing is the way they found out that Botox worked for migraine is that people were using it for cosmetic reasons, and then they're talking to their plastic surgeon or their dermatologist, and they're like, "Wow, my headaches are a lot better." Mm. And so that eventually led to these studies that got the FDA approval for the treatment of chronic migraine, and we use about anywhere from 25 to 33 little pokes of injections of Botox around the head and neck. And the going thought is that it actually blocks the pain signal and it inhibits the release of that CGRP medication we were talking about before mm-hmm. in the sensory nerves.
All right. I want to get in some more phone calls. In Maple Grove, Marge is on the line. Marge, thank you for waiting. And what did you want to ask or tell us about migraines?
Hi. So much to tell. I echo everything that has been said about the auras, about the, I have an autoimmune disorder, and it runs in our family, the migraines. My mother, my siblings have had it. We have herniated discs. So there's so much chronic that is going on in our family. But the main thing, I guess, that I wanted to say is, well, 2 things. One is, if you're not getting any help from the doctors that you're seeing, if your health insurance allows you, move on to other doctors, because it's surprising if you keep trying to find the right doctors, you can find the ones that will help you. Mm-hmm. I was on, my migraine problem started in the 1960s and 70s. I was on prophylactics. My insurance made me go from one to another until I could get on something that was better. when I became pregnant, I was scared because I thought I don't want to take medications while I'm pregnant. I never had one migraine headache while I was pregnant, not one, even though I was one of those that had more than 15 per month. When I had my hysterectomy, 90 to 95% of my headache, of my migraines were gone. Well, probably all my migraines were gone. They were probably, what I had left was like tension headaches. So for me, hormones was the main thing.
Hormones had a big impact. Thank you for sharing that, Marge. Let's take another phone call. In Woodbury, Michelle is on the line. And Michelle, what did you want to share with us about migraines and headaches?
Yeah, mine actually relates to what Marge just said, is my headaches I get monthly. I get them a week before my menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that my doctor helped me do after decades of fighting with this is instead of taking like birth control pills, we did a vaginal insert with the birth control nonstop. So I had a constant hormone, you know, constant level of hormones. So I didn't have that up and down. They're not gone, but I can now go to work and I don't miss 3 to 4 days of work anymore. So it's something to think about, and including the, from the food diary, is to pay attention to your cycle.
Right.
Now my fear is of I'm of an age where my cycle may be stopping and they want me to get off of the birth control because of other, you know, potential health issues with birth control. What am I going to do? Am I going to have this huge influx of headaches?
Mm-hmm. And what happens when menopause sets in as well, if we're looking at hormones? So Dr. Cha, thank you for calling in. Michelle, I appreciate hearing your story. Earlier, we mentioned women were 2 to 5 times more likely to experience headaches and migraines than men. So what can you tell us about this fluctuating hormonal cycle and our brains?
Yeah, so great callers, by the way, bringing up just incredibly important point. Always.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
So the menstrual cycle, and especially, you know, pregnancy, these are huge, you know, changes in both levels of estrogen and progesterone that not only work on vascular tone, but that also can act as neurotransmitters. And people often find that if they have menstrually related migraines, that once they undergo menopause, that they actually often get better because now you're not having fluctuating hormone levels. You're at a lower hormonal level, but it's no longer going up and down. Your brain's not having to adjust to, you know, these constantly changing levels of these neurosteroids. And that fits with what we see at the beginning of the menstrual cycle, where, you know, headaches are about, you know, even prevalence in boys and girls until they hit puberty. And then that, and at that puberty level is when the girls start to have more headaches than the boys, you know, because of that cycling. So I would not be too despondent about hitting menopause. There are some typical things about it, but, you know, improved menstrual migraines is one positive.
All right. Let's take another phone call. In St. Paul, we have Rachel on the line. Hi, Rachel. What do you want to tell us about headaches and migraines?
Hi. Yes. For me personally, in addition to a regular sleep-wake cycle, I also I found that physical activity for me really does help. I swim, I bike, I walk a lot. And I'm just wondering if it's known the mechanisms in the brain to help prevent, like how physical activity helps prevent migraines.
Mm. Exercise, Dr. Kassoon. Does exercise help with migraines and headaches?
Yes, it does. There are some studies that have looked at 30 minutes a day of cardiovascular exercise 3 times a week has been shown to reduce the frequency and severity of migraine headaches. It was primarily in a group where they're looking at cycling, but I think it's anything that you get a sweat going or your heart rate goes up. And I think some of it is the way that it works is the release of endorphins or adrenaline. You get the adrenaline pumping when you're exercising, and those actually have pain fighting properties to them, and can help fight the pain and the things that are going on with headaches.
I love all the ideas we're getting from listeners and for our doctors. And Dr. Kassoon, if I'm in the middle of having a headache, is there something I can do in the moment to lessen it? I mean, people have talked about laying down, getting into a dark space. What can shorten a severe headache?
There are a lot of different options. One, kind of go into a dark room, do the things that your body wants to tell you to. There's even things like breathing exercises. We talk about biofeedback, and there's this respiratory biofeedback, which really just teaches you how to breathe about 6 breaths per minute, and harnessing your autonomic nervous system to treat the headache in that way. Something like, we even have things like wearing FL41 lenses, where they kind of filter out the bad light rays that can trigger headaches. Relaxation techniques are helpful. If it's early on in the headache, or, it's always best to use the medications that you have as needed. They work better. And those are kind of a lot of the things that we recommend.
All right. We just have a minute and a half left in the show, but Heidi in Minnetonka, I want to get you in real quick, Heidi, because you had a treatment option you want to tell people about.
Yes. Hi. So I've had chronic migraines for about 15 years. They started in my early 20s, really, really debilitating. I took medications, preventative, and then at the onset of a migraine, I tried gluten-free, going to a chiropractor, and the treatment that has worked wonders for me. I don't take any medication anymore for my migraines. Is acupuncture. I've been doing that for about 2.5 years, and through pregnancy and postpartum, acupuncture has been incredibly successful for me.
Thank you, Heidi. We're out of time for the show, but I wanted to get that final suggestion in there. I thank our guests and our listeners so much for all the different options and the stories that you shared about headaches and migraines. Our guest today, Dr. Narayan Kasoon, a neurologist there at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and Dr. Yoon-Hee Cha, a neurologist at MHealth Fairview. This conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Be safe, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.